Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and I'll remind you that support for WEAA is provided by Gypsy Soul and Lil So-So Productions, announcing the official kickoff, of the Baltimore opening of Fela. It's Fela Fever, hosted by WEAA's DJ Levy of Africa and World Beat, May 13th at the Calypso Cafe. Tickets available online at Fela, F-E-L-A, fever.eventbrite.com. Don't miss it. So we're about to turn our attention to some local issues, to what's going on in Baltimore. Many things were written about the show that we did last week that one of my guests, Hassan Giordano, was on when we talked about the Wertesheim case coming in. There were many news items about people leaving the city hall, and Hassan wrote a piece about that for the Baltimore Independent Examiner column online where he writes. And we're going to look at that and some of the issues facing the city. Hassan is with us. Will Hanna is with us, who is president of the New Park Heights CDC. It's all good to see you, Will.
How's it going?
Good to have you here. And thank Aaron Meisner is with us. And Aaron, I said, maybe the last time I show you, you were on with Will last time.
Well could have been.
Yeah, I think you might have been. And neighborhood activist and former president of the Mount Washington Improvement Association. And then we were talking about gambling at Pimlico and other places, and also what to do with Pimlico Racetrack. Well, gentlemen, good to have you here.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
410-319-8888 is the number here. So let me ask this first and hear your thoughts out there at 410-319-8888. I'm going to ask my guests what they think are the issues of the day for this, for us to wrestle with in this community. I'll raise some issues. I want to hear what you think as well. But you wrote about, Hassan, the numbers of people leaving City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sun wrote about it. Other people have written about it as well. But your piece, I think, was much more pointed in where it pointed the finger at what could be happening. So, but how significant is this to all of you? How significant is it to you?
I think it can be very significant. It depends on how the mayor handles it. Again, before it came on last week, my opinion was usually with a new term, with a governor, a mayor, or a president, they have the authority to clean house. And I thought that it was some
right.
of the Dixon appointees being pushed out. But members inside of City Hall called and said, no, that's not the case. Actually, it seems to be those who are around the mayor, Stephanie Rawlins-Blake, seem to be pushing senior people like Mr. Bielfeld and Ms. Goldstein out of City Hall.
So you think Fred Bielfeld was pushed out of City Hall?
Yes.
Why do you think that?
Well, the reasons that are being pointed is that her two senior advisors, Kim Washington and Ms. Calliope, beautiful ladies, but they're saying that they were her childhood friends. And obviously anybody who comes in politics usually keeps those who are closest to them around them. That's
right.
A smart thing to do. And they've been around since her father, Pete Rawlins, over 16 years ago. So that's smart. But they're also saying that it was a friction there, that they were not allowing policies that came from Greg Barrett and Rex and Parks and or Fred Bielfeld in the criminal coalition to actually reach the mayor. And what they're saying is that there was friction that at the top of the mayor. A lot of people said that the Grand Prix was supposed to be called off a while ago and that Ms. Calliope kept it going. Now it's supposed to be canceled within the next couple of weeks and postponed to next year. What rumors are.
I mean, is there any sense that people like Fred Bielfeld couldn't have a direct call to the mayor? We don't know that for a fact, though, do we? We're just that supposition.
Go ahead, Will.
I don't think that that's necessarily the case. Not that they can't get directly to the mayor. I think that the mayor may have a group of people around her that are advising her in whatever capacity they're doing it in. But when you look at the mass exodus, we'll call it, from City Hall, and you look at who's leaving, I think it's not so much, it's the positions that they're leaving from, and they're very important and pertinent positions to the city, the budget director, the finance officer, the president of BDC. So you look at all of these, along with the police commissioner and Rex and Parks. So these are huge positions that now, who fills those positions? I think that's the next thing, is who fills those positions, and what level and what do they bring to the table that's going to help this city?
Yeah, well, there's always opportunity when you have the chance to replace people. I don't think there are too many folks out there who are going to jump up and down and say, I'm so thrilled with the way things are going for Baltimore. I mean, we are in a struggle here that's very serious. So having an opportunity to bring new people in that could be a great thing.
Could be.
But, you know, this is going to be a moment of truth here for the mayor. And, you know, it's going to – we're going to see whether or not she's going to bring in great people who are going to stay or whether we're going to get, you know, more kind of treading water in terms of leadership. And, you know, we're just not seeing a lot of fantastic new ideas. This could be an opportunity. But I'll tell you, the danger here is if you don't get people who are going to stick, and Greg Bear from Rec and Parks is a great example. When I worked in neighborhood politics extensively, you know, we worked with so many heads of Rec and Parks, and it was a revolving door. And every time you get a new person, and you got to look at this in terms of the customers, the taxpayers of the city of Baltimore. Every time you bring somebody new in, it takes 6 months to get the appointment with that person. They have to come up to speed. They have to start to understand your issues. They've got to bring it back to their works and circle back to you. So by the time you get to meeting number two, you're 24 months in. And if that person is only going to be around for 23 months, you're going nowhere. And so this is a really big deal. You know, all other things off the table, just in terms of how do you run the city?
Yeah, and Ms. Thomasina Hines just coming in replacing Peter O'Malley, who has now been replaced by Alexander Sanchez,
right,
who
I
announced
there,
that today they announced him. That turnover as chief of staff, Greg Barrett at Rex and Parks, who the mayor appointed herself, this wasn't a Dixon appointee, raises the most issues, especially when, but you know, because honestly, Ed Gallagher, Jay Brody, they've been around a long time. People expected them to eventually leave. So that doesn't raise so much concerns. But when you have, again, another Governor O'Malley appointee coming in to run City Hall, you know, it becomes a question of, okay, what's next? You know, Peter O'Malley was only there for a year. And most people saw that. It was probably there just for the campaign. Okay. Most people saw that last year. And, you know, again, I don't think the mayor really cares because, you know what, she was elected to this term. And that, quite frankly, says that the voters of this city have that much faith in her to run the next four, which actually five years now because of the Senate bill that was just passed. So, you know, honestly, it's her administration. And again, I think time will tell. I think we've got to be cautiously optimistic because she could bring in people who are even better, like you said.
I mean, there was clearly some problems at the top with the chief of staff moving and the rest and like that. Bielfeld, I think his resigning, he almost seemed relieved at resigning.
Well, five years
as
chief of police in Baltimore City. You know, my hat is off to the man. I mean, say what you will about, you know, we got a lot of problems with policing in the city. The police department is arguably too big. It's maybe over-militarized in terms of how we respond to little street protests. But that's a tough job, and you've got to be worried about what people are doing in your name 24 hours a day. That, you know, I'm not going to jump on that as anything out of the ordinary.
But that's big, because think about it. He was appointed by Sheila Dixon from a zero tolerance under O'Malley to a community policing. Now, that has led to last year being the lowest number of homicides in almost 30 years. Now, is she going to take the zero tolerance approach and bring in the new commissioner, or will we continue with this community policing? I think that's one of the biggest people that are departing.
This is it. I mean, let's talk about this for a moment. And folks, I'd like you to join us here, 410-319-8888. I know there's a lot of controversy around Commissioner Bielfeld, and I'm just going to throw something on the table, and you may disagree or agree with what I'm about to say. Because I mean, I've had my differences with the commissioner on the show, and we've gone back and forth a lot, especially my whole issues around institutional racism that I think exists deeply in a police department. That don't mean that every cop is racist or that Bielfeld is racist, but that it's part of the institution and it works itself out what happens to young, especially young black men or black men in this community. Having said that, I mean, I think Bielfeld really, I thought, tried to steer the department into community policing. He really did try to get people out of their cars. Wasn't completely successful with that, but he pushed that. Pushed the idea of lowering the arrest and just going after the hardest cases. Maybe I didn't always agree with how he went after the hardest cases, but he focused on that and cut down arrests. I mean, so I think he'll be a difficult person to replace because he spent all those years in the force. He knows the force. People respected him, black and white cops, period. What were you going to say, Will?
Well, I was going to say, well, I agree with that. I think that when we look at who replaces, when you look at his numbers, and right now when we go off numbers, that's basically how we judge someone's performance, is, and the numbers speak for themselves. Like him, hate him, love him, but his numbers speak for themselves. But how do you replace that, and who do you replace that with? You know, you'll have some people that will say, you know, well, this is a majority African-American city. Maybe we should get an African-American that should lead the police department. But the numbers went down on his watch. He's not African-American. So I think it, when you look at those things and his record, again, but you have some people that make the argument. If he came in after the zero tolerance period, if everybody was already dead or in jail, the numbers were automatically going to go down. So, you know, you have some people that make that argument as well.
Well, you got to understand, he has that approach because of Sheila Dixon. That was her approach, and that's why she brought him in. Yeah. Now, Stephanie Rawlins-Blake seems to be more in approach with the governor, which is zero tolerance. And that is a big – look, 197 murders, what was last year? That didn't come overnight. That came from 2007 on. Mm-hmm. And so the new commissioner, if you come around and change things around when you come in, that's going to make a big difference in policing, homicides, and a lot of other things in this city. I mean, police morale was up under Bielfeld from what I've been told. I'm not a police officer, obviously, but so, you know, that's what we would say. But, I mean, honestly, he was a likable guy. He was an approach. And not, let's not forget, Cheryl Goldstein is a very remarkable young lady who herself has left. So that's two big gaping holes in public safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think it is going to be very interesting to see what the replacement looks like. And not just in terms of hiring a police chief, that is probably one of the most difficult things that a big city mayor has to do. So I don't envy anybody involved in that search or that decision. That's a tough one.
Well,
but we're going to find out here about O'Malley. And so what do you mean? Well, I think what happens is you keep seeing over and over in the decision making that it seems to be driven by Annapolis. The things that we do here in Baltimore are driven by Annapolis. So, you know, why is the mayor advocating for a casino location in Prince George's County? Not to bring up my least favorite topic in the world. But, you know,
the one that gives you the most angst, I should say, right?
God, don't get me started. Well, I'm already started.
You're already
started. So what happens, though, is, you know, that's an argument that really benefits Annapolis. That is directly to the detriment of us here in Baltimore, because that's a competing site. If we're talking about driving revenue to build schools from this casino, the last thing you want is yet another casino. So I don't quite understand what is going on there. But to me, it sounds like that's an Annapolis call. That's not good for Baltimore. That's good for Annapolis. And so now what we're going to – and you see over and over again, the new chief of staff happens to be the head of currently the head of DLLR.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, Mr. Sanchez. So here's another name coming out of it, coming out of the O'Malley universe to live here in Baltimore. You know, when are we going to stand up for ourselves and make decisions that benefit the city itself? And that's a big accusation, and there it is.
On the table.
I think the other side of that is when you look for replacement, do you look internally within the department if there's a culture that's already been built there? Do you look internally within that department? Or do you do like they always do, which they say it's a national search, but it goes straight to New York, but we conduct a national search.
We almost did.
But a lot of people would argue that there's a lot of good officers within the department that could step up into that position.
We're going to take a very brief break and come right back with our three guests. 410-319-8888. Andrea, you're the first caller up coming back. When you hear your thoughts, I'm going to ask all three of these men when we come back what they think are the most pressing issues from their perspective that the city should be addressing and dealing with, and are we doing it or not. 410-319-8888. Stay with us with more of Hassan Giordano, Will Hanna, and Aaron Meisner. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and I remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. If you're a first or second time home buyer looking for a home in Baltimore, you may find one here. Call 1-800-638-7781, the Maryland Mortgage Program, 1-800-638-7781. In the studio, Aaron Meisner, neighborhood activist and former president of the Mount Washington Improvement Association, Will Hanna, president of the New Park Heights CDC, Hassan Giordano, who writes the Baltimore Independent Examiner column for the Baltimore Examiner website, and you at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on these changes, your thoughts in the personnel in City Hall, what you think are the most important issues facing our town right now, 410-319-8888 is the number here. And we'll raise some other issues here in the air. But during the break, I said to you all that I was really taken by the article that Chris Delaporte, the former head of Parks, wrote in the Baltimore Brew, where he was saying that that we need a city audit of all the kind of city agencies, and that he says there are no audits of things like the extra work orders, which go out if a place needs more money, how much money is being spent, where it's going. And he said that it's crazy and has to be done. And we're arranging to have him come on with some elected officials so they can have a conversation together about all of that. And then you all kind of erupted into, this is the issue.
Absolutely. I mean, Councilman Carl Stokes introduced it already. And I think it's spot on, especially the last time we had one, when we said it was $58 million. We saw, oh, my God, it was missing from the school system. I mean, this right here, Will, just attested to it. How can you know how much money you really have when you've never done? And most people would say, well, what in the world is Joan Pratt supposed to do? Because she is our comptroller. So, I mean, when are we going to actually see an audit of all the government departments and locally?
I think what people ask for when they say they want an audit, all they ask for is people to do their job. You know, we're not asked for anything that's unreasonable. I think that the only way you find out how much money you need to spend is how to find out where you are. It's just like in my house, when I have to manage my checkbook, I have to say, okay, this is what my balance is before I know I can write any new checks. And I think we need to do that when we look at Rex and Parks' budget and we look at our public safety budget and how we spend. We need to find out where we are, but we never do that because we've never conducted an audit to say, this is our bottom line and now we can spend this much or this is what we need to fund.
Yeah, well, I always kind of put it this way. You know, every year we go through this budgeting exercise where we say, well, we don't have enough revenues. We got to raise revenues. That's taxes to normal people. And then at the same time, we're going to cut something. We got to cut the pools. We got to cut the rec centers. We've got to cut road building, whatever it is. So every year we go through this, and what that means is a higher cost to the taxpayer and a lower level of services, which is the road to oblivion. You cannot have a sustainable city like this. And so the question comes, you know, when you see money appearing and disappearing, and we were talking in the break about the money that was found for the pools, and everybody was rejoicing about the fact that we've now found the money for the pools. Well, that's not a cause for celebration. That's a cause for concern, because what that means is that money was misplaced. And if you're going to tell people you're going to cut their programs, not have their kids in air-conditioned classrooms, not have state-of-the-art schools, not have swimming pools open in the summer, and you're going to raise their taxes, you better know where the money is. And when you say you don't know, that's just not acceptable.
And also being said is that where's the money to do the audits? Is that when the argument's being made?
Well, that would be the argument, but the rational argument is, trust me, we're going to find the money to do it. And not to mention, you have an entire comptroller's office that gets paid to do that. That's why they are there.
It's an audit
and
department.
You have an auditing department under the mayor. And so, you know, people, when you look at the school system, Erica Green did a great job when she realized, okay, these kids got to go to school, no air conditioning, no heat. They got to bring their own toilet paper in some schools. But yet you have a guy in here with an IT department building new things and brand new offices. And that begins to make voters who don't pay attention to politics say, hold on, something isn't right. And I think that, you know, starting with Councilman Carl Stokes and others would say, you know what, maybe something isn't right. Let's at least take a look at it.
Yeah, Hassan's on to something important here. And, you know, it's not just voters who start to get their dander up over this kind of thing. It's people in Annapolis who, you know, we go to Annapolis hat in hand and say, we need new schools. And they say, well, I'm not, you know, show me your books. And we don't have books that are in order. So, you know, until we're, you know, you can't get a mortgage until you can produce your tax returns and your banking statements. And we're going to Annapolis and saying we want all this money. we better show that we've got our house in order as well.
I think that when we talked about the schools, just one point, and Aaron alluded to it, to conduct that audit initially, they said that the books weren't in order to do the audit. How many agencies could we go to and say that? Now, as whether we run nonprofits, whether we run a business, that's just not a good way to run a business. And how many agencies can we go to, whether it's housing, whether it's public works? How many of those agencies have the same problem? And I think that's the question, is that we don't know.
So, folks, what's important to you? 410-319-8888. Maybe there's someone on the phone at the time. Our wonderful intern picks up the phone, it goes dead. So try again, 410-319-8888. We'll get these things to work right. And we want to hear what you think are the most important issues here in Baltimore, what you think about where the money may be in the city and why we're not doing the audits we should. I think that one of the things we'll do in the next week is to make a call to Comptroller Pratt's office and ask her about if that's her job, why isn't it being done, if it is her job. And if it isn't her job, why isn't it her job, and what she thinks, since she's talking about running for comptroller of the state of Maryland. And we'll talk about that. And ask the mayor's office the same thing. We'll have people on to wrestle with this. I think that the idea of where is our money, now that we're dropping property taxes, less revenue for the city, so where is the money going to come from? And if it's there, where is it?
Not to mention, they can't even get water bills right. So, I mean, how can you properly run an agency and you can't even get somebody's water bill right? Thousands of dollars, and then you're foreclosing on these people's houses. I mean, these are real issues that people right. face every day, Mark. You see it. You right. hear it. They yeah. pull you up. And these people are in politics and government laying back because it doesn't affect them. Their paychecks come all the time. They're good. And if something does go wrong, they know who to call. Well, the average person doesn't get that type of service in Baltimore, and people are fed up.
Yeah. Mark, you keep sort of bringing up this question, what's the most important issue in the city of Baltimore? And for me, the most important issue is always population. We need more customers. We have a product that we sell for twice as much as anybody else. So our property tax rate is twice what it is anywhere else. And if we're charging that much to our customers, we better be delivering a very good product. Now, I think living in the city is worth a premium, because it's better than living in the county, right? We don't have to commute so far. You know, we've got a lot of great cultural institutions. This is a great place to live. It's a great lifestyle, but we can't be charging this much for it. And I think that in Annapolis, every time a bill passes, or even a bill is submitted, there has to be a fiscal note attached to it. Right? The fiscal note tells you what the economic impact of that bill is going to be. I think it would be a great idea if every piece of legislation in front of the city council had a population note attached to it that simply analyzed whether this bill was going to drive population into or out of Baltimore City.
Well, go ahead, Will.
Well, I think one of the other important things is when we talk about how do we increase or wanting to increase the population of the city, we have to wonder why would people want to come to Baltimore. So when you look at just the aesthetics of the city, when you look at thousands and thousands and rows of vacant houses, you have a city that can't even govern or run itself, can't get water bills right, as Hassan said, don't want to keep recs and pools open because they're the first thing that they look to cut. And then you say, we want to bring 10,000 families back to Baltimore. To go where?
And that's the bigger problem is that, let's be for real, think about people outside of Baltimore. You're looking at the Examiner. You're seeing the Erica Green articles in the Sun. You're looking at everything, and everything is water bills. They're doing this wrong. They're doing that wrong. 12 people leave Baltimore City. Oh, my God, what's going on, really? Bill Fell's leaving. And real issues, Councilman Nick Mosby has a real good bill about getting younger people away from the bars and going inside the bars during the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, issues that can really mean things in the communities don't even get addressed, don't get the proper media attention because we have all this other negative stuff just – it's like it's a bad cloud just hanging over top of Baltimore, and I don't know when the sun's coming.
And then you have the Grand Prix.
Oh.
Which we probably won't have is my guess. Let's go to the phones at 410-319-8888. Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Andrew.
You
welcome.
You left out a key important thing. The schools. The
Absolutely.
Schools.
Amen.
Like, now that I'm not stalking your show every day, I started my own business.
You're always welcome. You're always welcome, Andrew.
Thank you. But I started my own business where I contract with the schools. And, oh, my God, like, it's going well, but, I mean, just what some of the teachers go through, and then I'm like, there's no supplies, and then you can't, like, they're like, you can't drink the water. Well, why I want to wash my hands with it if I can't drink it? It's still going to go through my skin. So, I mean, I hate to sound pessimistic, but I think even, I mean, you really want to believe that with a new administration, with all this turnover, that people would come in. But then you have to even wonder, like, your mayor is not a people person. Like, I haven't seen her, but I met the commissioner a couple times, and he made fun of my accent, but he was a people person.
So,
like, how can you expect anything to change? I mean, how can I've never seen a mayor be successful that's not concerned about the people.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, and you know, our mayor is does not seem approachable and has a reputation for that, and you know, that does, again, you got to ask the question about how are you selling the city as a product to your potential customers, and she doesn't necessarily come off as a great spokesperson. Now, I have nothing to say, you know, personally about the mayor. But you've got a very good point there. Your perception is something that's picked up on by a lot of people. With regard to the schools, I think we've got, you know, a huge amount of work. I mean, I'm very excited about what's been done. Both of my kids are in the Baltimore City Schools, and I can tell you that there's some great things going on. However, there are still way too many schools that are you know, in deep trouble, both in terms of the physical plan and in terms of the way they're being run. And, you know, it is really a big problem because parents can't even consider some of these boarded up row houses because they can't consider the schools. It's very tough.
I'm going to give the phone to you, Hassan.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I addressed her personality in that article from last night, and that's just a real perception. Is that, and Sheila Dixon had that when she was council president, and she worked on it because she was seen as icy and shut off. But once you got to know her, mm-hmm. it was a totally different, and she worked on that and became probably one of the most beloved mayors we've had since William Dowling Schaefer. And so, you know, Stephanie has that, but a lot of people feel like she doesn't care what people think about her, and that is a problem when you're the mayor of a city.
She was beloved until that.
and she still is to a degree.
I think that the school thing we'll get into another day, but I am very happy where schools are going on many levels, and I think Lonzo has done some good things. However, I've been seeing some things lately about these charter schools that we're having. While I understand the power of them and why people want them, and I was even supportive of many of them in the beginning, is that we have a system now that's in danger of becoming a tiered system.
Mm-hmm.
That if you don't get into a charter school, you're dumped into a school in your neighborhood which doesn't have resources. What charter schools have. Mm-hmm. So this is a danger. We could go back to a tiered system, which we don't need. But that's be another day. We have to address that one. 410-319-8888. Rosalind, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thanks
Welcome.
For taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I love your program, Mark.
You.
And I'm just really concerned. A longtime city resident, all my life exactly, but several red flags are being waved here, and you have to look to the top. You have to look to the administration. I don't think that Mayor Rawlings Blake has the confidence of the people in the city, and I think that you can look at the vote, the amount of people that came out to vote, and the several red flags, main people leaving, top administrative positions. That makes me real suspect of what's going on in City Hall and where the city is going. The city's priorities is really, really off. Everyday working people that's working, trying to survive, is not being looked at. It's not being thought of when these decisions are being made.
Well, I think that there's the question we've raised in the show before, and I would bring these gentlemen others back to kind of wrestle with it, which is what could we be doing in Baltimore that's creative and pragmatic that could change the tenor of this community. I mean, you can debate whether lower property taxes or not. But even it takes those kind of things notwithstanding for a moment. What can you do to change, creatively and practically change the tenor of the community we're in to make it grow, given that, you know, mayors can't always be the ones that create jobs that put people to work.
Right.
That's a tough thing for a mayor to do.
Okay. Well, you know, we started off talking about the flight from City Hall of these employees. Now, the mayor has an opportunity to make appointments. Remember, it's not, you know, we are observers here in this room. It is not our role to run the city. We have a mayor that a small handful of people elected. That's a problem in itself. But the reality is that this is the mayor's opportunity. And, you know, this is where I think we, the people of the city of Baltimore, need to really be paying attention, because either we're going to get some results, we're going to get some pragmatic, good new ideas, or we're not. And if we're not, then, you know, the people of the city of Baltimore cannot stay home on election day anymore. You can't just let this roll over you.
I think that one of the things that we have, and I'll say this, we as a city, our officials, the people that represent us, I don't think they've come up with the most creative ways of getting this city back on track the way that it needs to. For one, Aaron points out, and we all know, that this city does not create enough revenue to redevelop itself. It just isn't there right now. And in some cases, it's a matter of priority. Let's put that on the table as well. It's a matter of priority. But this city, there's not enough revenue in this city. Let's assume that there's not enough to redevelop itself. What you need is, instead of those, you need more of those public private partnerships, and you need investors to come into the city that want to invest in the city to redevelop it. And right now, no one's marketing this city to anyone that wants to invest in it, because they don't see what the final product is. And who's going to handle my investment? Who's handling my money? If I was an investor looking to invest in Baltimore, I'd have to say, who is handling my money? Because you can't even handle your own money.
Well, and like Councilman Carlos Lopez, he stays on this point. You're giving all these big developers these tax breaks, but when small businesses and residents want to do that, they don't get the same
right.
TIFs and pilots and tax breaks that these big developers does. So that's a big part in itself. Like you said, innovative policies. You know, we propose two that, number one, tackle illegal hacking. They're doing it in D.C., making millions of dollars over there off just that. And it's also creating a hubbub for cabs, who are actually the legal ones who are supposed to be transporting people. Those type of innovative things are good. But if you look at it, Mark, the mayor, since her inauguration, has been absent. I mean, everything, if you see it, everything in any paper or anything is always Ryan O'Doherty. She has basically stepped away. And that might have worked good for FDR in 1932. And, I mean, he did that as a counterattack strategy. And that may be hers. But the perception right now is that she's aloof, that she's not connected to the citizens of this city. And it makes people begin to wonder what actually has happened at City Hall instead of seeing actual real results.
FDR did have his fireside chats, though. 410-319-8888. Cora, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening.
Welcome.
I recently turned you on, and I came in on the tail end where the gentleman was speaking to fiscal notes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I just have a suggestion as one who's written my share of those fiscal notes, as opposed to trying to get new legislation passed. It may be better to modify your existing legislation to include the economic benefits component of the fiscal note to explain whether or not they will or will not benefit the general population, how and why. If it's not already being presented in that fashion, that could be a way to navigate around having new legislation passed to just modify the existing one that you have.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great idea. This is just something that kind of occurred to me as, you know, you drive around. I mean, I had a kind of a scary experience. I drove from Silver Spring on a Thursday evening. I was downtown Silver Spring, and I drove, and it was, you know, people out in the street, and they're shopping, and they're eating in restaurants, and I was like, where am I? You know, Silver Spring. This is supposed to be in the middle of nowhere. when I was a kid growing up in the 80s. I drive back to Baltimore City that same night, and I drive in through downtown Baltimore, and it's empty, and there's no vibrancy.
That's disheartening.
There's no energy on the street, and you can just tell, you know, the issue here is we don't have enough players on our team. We don't have enough people living in Baltimore anymore. And there are many, many reasons for that. And
but we do have people living in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. The question is, do we need more people or a better city? I mean, there are people living in Baltimore, but you can't. We're always looking to kind of bring people in without figuring out how to take care of the
people
folks that are here.
Yeah, and I think that if you look at, you know, who are the customers we're trying to bring in, right? And I always like to look at it in terms of customers. So we want to bring people into the city who are going to be engaged in the life of the city, who are going to really embrace what it means to be a citizen here. And that means economically, that means participating in the education system. It means getting out and enjoying and participating in the social life of your city. You know, we have created a set of economic incentives through our tax structure, and I hate to keep coming back to it, but, you know, incentives are real, and we have created a set of incentives that have driven a lot of the people out who had in the 50s and 60s and, you know, in the early 70s even, who had really participated.
And we got to get out of this campaign style. City council as well, not just the mayor, city council, because it's divided down there and it's still, they're campaigning and not governing. There's a big difference between the two, and any strategist will tell you this is what you do to campaign, this is what you do in the next 4 years. A lot of people just can't govern, and they're down there playing politics with if you're against the mayor or not, and they're not looking at real ideas like we talked about with the Councilman Stokes bringing in with the audits and everything else. Oh, no, you're just doing that because of politics. Look, we got to put politics aside and start governing for the real people, and it's just not happening.
You are right on with that comment. And what I see when you read about the news from City Hall and when you read the spokes, you know, Mr. O'Doherty's comments, there is a big not invented here anti-bias in City Hall. And if it's a Catherine Pugh idea or an Otis Rowley idea, it is not something they're interested in having a conversation about. And those were some good ideas.
Mm-hmm. Let me open the phones here again. I mean, one of the things that I think that, you know, that I'm really torn about the whole idea whether we need more people in Baltimore, whether you can build a city with what you have and you can still attract some people in. But, I mean, I really think that, you know, let's take one idea that did not get through the state legislature. For some reason, I still have an answer why it didn't get through, which was the idea that the people in Transform Baltimore were pushing, which is a bond bill that would be made up, that we would get, what was it, we would get $1.2 billion to immediately begin rebuilding our schools. Mm-hmm. Now, if that money came into Baltimore, it could be repaid by the $60 million that we put up in our budget for the schools in the city, matched by the money that the state gives us. Instead of it going into school construction, it would go into paying back this bond. Now, that could put hundreds of men and women or more to work in Baltimore and show the students that we care about the city and could start creating a working middle class in Baltimore slowly that lives here.
But so we
the,
almost
the question
had it,
mark
though.
Is why didn't it happen?
No, but we almost had it. And I'm going to tell you something. And I reported on this, and it doesn't get done too often, not since I've been in Annapolis. Mm-hmm. But at the end, when Mike Miller won a gaming, Kurt Anderson, the chair of the delegation in the House, and the entire House delegation said, we're not going to vote for that unless you give us an extra billion in bonds to go to our schools. And it was written in the legislation, but of course, you know, sine die happened, and that bill never went through. And that's why I think we need to focus our attention again
on the session,
on the special session, to say, you're not going to get that August session, and you're not going to get gaming unless we get that $1 billion. That's the first time I've seen the House unified since Thornton in 2002, which was an unfunded mandate. And, I mean, they did a great job.
This wouldn't be unfunded. It would be paid back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I'm talking about Thornton was an unfunded mandate.
Right.
That's a great idea.
This is a Montgomery County trick.
And you don't have to raise bottle taxes.
You're not going to get me to argue in favor of any more taxes. But this is a Montgomery County trick. You know, the Montgomery County delegation is very good at unity within their coalition. You want to know why it didn't pass in Annapolis? They don't trust that we're going to be good stewards of their money.
Their money.
And, you know, I, I'm a huge booster of Baltimore. I love Baltimore. We need that money. Do they have a point? Yeah, they have a really good point. That's the problem. And until we're going to show that we're good stewards of that cash, you know, I mean, what are you going to say?
Especially when our schools get more money than any other school district and other county in this state. And we still are griping about what's next. But we, in our city budget, we give children only 15%, while public safety always gets 40 to 45% of the budget. Something's wrong with that equation. We have to be able to change the dynamics there.
Will, were you about to say something?
No, I was listening to something, but I agree. Is you can't, I mean, if we don't have politicians that are strong enough to say, okay, look, we're going to get this done, and you're going to get, this doesn't happen in D.C. This doesn't happen in Washington, D.C. This happens in Baltimore because we allow it. It's allowed. One, they know the voters aren't going to come out and strike them down if they don't. And two, they don't have the political will to drive and say, you know what, we're going to make this happen, and you're going to give it to us no matter what. That's the issue. If the voters, if they know that you got this on both ends, you don't have the voter support and you don't have the political will, nothing gets done. And that's what we look at. So every time we look at something that we want to get done, it never happens. Great ideas, a lot of great ideas that we see come through every legislation, none of them get done. And they are the most beneficial to the city.
And that's how the mayor and the city council got an extra year, Senate Bill 597. The mayor was the only person to support the whole, I mean, Casa de Maryland, League of Women Voters,
everybody
NAA,
against
the
it.
Whole community was against it. But the legislature just said, you know what, we're going to go with the mayor and give him an extra
now,
year.
Now, I'm going to go back and beat on my population drum again, because your point, Will, about what's going on in D.C., D.C. rationalized their tax code, drew in thousands and thousands of new residents, and those residents were engaged in the life of the city, and they won't stand for it. In the city of Baltimore, we have this huge middle-class flight, and you have – what's the turnout like in the city of Baltimore? Okay. I mean, I calculated the other day, for every day of the mayor's term, the five-year term, something like 11 people voted for each day. I mean, it's crazy how few people actually turn out to vote. So – you know, it all, again, for me, everything comes back to population.
Let's get one more. Can we have time for one more caller here? 410-319-8888. And Phyllis, you're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Phyllis.
I wondered if you guys would comment on something for me, please. The first issue is about the number of boarded-up houses in Baltimore City. I remember calling into a radio program similar to this back in the 80s, I guess, when I was first going out to work. And Mayor Schmoke was the mayor then. And since then, we've had a number of mayors, and it just seems like that issue has never been addressed. The second issue is this, that I'm one of those city residents who has a $5,000 water bill, and the city can't seem to explain to me why they can't reduce my water bill back to what it used to be prior to getting these astronomical bills. I'll take my answer.
Crazy. We only have like 4 minutes left, gentlemen. So who wants that?
Well, the water bill, I'll just address that. Take that straight to City Hall. Give it straight to Mary Pat Clark or City Council President Jack Young. You can call them or go down there. They'll take care of that. They've been really good on people who've had that, and they've taken care of that issue for them.
Yeah. Well, on the boarded up houses, I mean, Will's the world's expert on that. But, you know, if you've been following that issue since the 80s, ask yourself how many times the property taxes have gone up. And, you know, you get a house that falls into disrepair. It's no longer economical to do the repairs. And so people board it up and walk away. There's never been any creative thinking in terms of, well, I'm not going to say that in blanket. But there's definitely a shortage of good ideas on that front.
One of the things with the boarded up houses really quick is the city ends up having to take these properties by receivership. So the city gets left with a lot of the properties. So when people look at the list and they say, well, this property is owned by the city, and the city has 47,000 properties. Well, there's a reason for that. But at the same time, that is some inventory that's valuable real estate that is opportunity. There's a lot you can do with 47,000 vacant properties. There's a lot of workforce development opportunities. There's a lot of housing opportunities that are built into 47,000 vacant properties. So I think it's being creative enough to have the ideas that can drive the city forward. And I think getting rid of those vacant houses is a huge one.
Aren't half of them owned by Governor O'Malley and his people? What they've been saying, and they've been holding them.
Well, new ideas.
Driving down the pressure, I'm telling you.
New people, new ideas. It's an opportunity.
I mean, they're owned by the city. not a lot. Most of them are owned by the city. And close to half are owned by the city.
But what about the ones who are independently owned and they're not doing anything about making sure they do something with them?
And in the presidential race, in the mayoral race, one of the candidates, Jody Landers, had an idea which I thought there were a lot of good ideas came out of that campaign from a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
His idea was that we tax properties differently in Baltimore City. Abandoned houses, you tax them more.
Like in D.C.
Like in D.C. And get rid of them as you tax them more. Take them over and either tear them down or give them over to people who can rehab.
Okay, so where's
and
the
Jody
innovation?
Should take Jay Brody's spot. I've been an advocate of Jody. Jody's been working in the city since he was...
If Jody took over BDC...
It would be a different BDC.
You'd have somebody in charge who would be completely transparent and open it up.
Okay, so where are the bold...
That's
where
he is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's who he is.
But politics is going to play into that. You know that. Politics is... Well, he's the best man for the position. Yeah. He's homegrown. He knows everything about it.
And
but
he ran against
he won't
get it. And he ran against her, so it's not invented here.
But
that's it.
That would be the smartest thing you could do is to bring somebody in who was maybe your opponent at one point who would serve... But she appointed him to a commission.
Obama Clinton.
It worked for Abraham Lincoln.
And if you meet Jody, he doesn't hold grudges. So it's not like he's that guy who's going to try to get at her. He's going to do his job for the citizens of the city and make her shine.
I might be showing my age, but I've known Jody since he was 16 when he was one of my kids.
Yeah, you're showing your age.
I guess we just launched a campaign for Jody Landers.
Gentlemen, I'm going to say it's always great. This is a good program. I appreciate
Man, this
y'all
is
coming
great.
In.
Thanks, Mark.
Aaron Meiser, Will Hanna, Hassan Giordano. Great to have you all in the air.
Thank you so much.
We'll connect to Hassan's articles on our website, steinershow.org. You won't miss that. The stuff he's been writing. On the way out of here, I want to remind you, not out of here, just for the next segment, the WEAA broadcast live from the island of Curaçao Labor Day weekend, during the Curaçao North Sea Jazz Festival, featuring Jill Scott, Carlos Santana, Indy Iria, and many more. Information at WEAA.org, brought to you by the Curaçao Tourist Bureau, Princess Beach Resort and Casino, and public radio WEAA-FM, the voice of the community. And we're going to take a break, come back with... the great sports commentator Frank DeForti joins us. He'll be in Baltimore Wednesday night at the Enoch Pratt Free Library. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Don't go away.